Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. How you doing? I hope you're gearing up for a lovely Easter weekend, whatever you're going to be doing. And it's been so nice to see a bit of sunshine this week, hasn't it? It makes such a difference wherever you are in the world. I hope you've managed to get a bit of sunshine and get out and about. I've got a really good show lined up for you today. Some of you will remember that ages ago I interviewed Lotta Dan, author of Mrs. D is Going Without and Mrs. D is Going Within. In fact, I think I've interviewed her twice on the podcast, but a long time ago. So I'm really pleased I've got another opportunity to chat to her about the new book, The Wine O'Clock Myth. And so that's coming up a little bit later on. I'm also going to be telling you about a great new alcohol-free cocktail that I've discovered that I didn't know about before. I mean, it's just so exciting to see these brands, and this one is very cool. So James 101. So I'm going to be telling you a bit about that brand, and we've got competition if you want to win any. But just before I get into that, I just had this really lovely message from a guy who says, "I just purchased your book last week." This is Happy, Healthy, Sober, by the way, if you've been on a desert island and you haven't heard me talking about it. It's now 18 months since I gave up alcohol and 9 years since I was drunk. I'm thoroughly enjoying life as never before. I owe you one, Janie. Best wishes. Isn't that brilliant? Honestly, I just getting those messages, it just means so much. It really means so much to me. I just absolutely love it when, you know, I get it a lot in the Sober Club, of course. People post, you know, their a little picture of their sober app saying they've been sober for whatever it is. You know, one woman is posting every day and she's like 3 days, and then today she's 4 days, and it's just super exciting. And then other people are 2 years and 3 years, and you know, it never gets tired. It never ever gets tired, this stuff. And you know, well, you know by now, that's my kind of raison d'etre to try and get that message across, that life is just so amazing without the booze. So I did a really nice interview on Instagram with Tony from the Shelf Help Club. Perfect for me, because as I said on that interview, I've been doing the Shelf Help for years. I've been literally queen of self-improvement, you know, almost being flattened under the weight of the self-help books. And yeah, I was genuinely queen of all of that stuff, every single holistic thing and well-being and mindset and meditation that you could think of. But you know, walking around the elephant in the room that was booze. So we did an interview the other day, and as always, you know, we got to the topic of alcohol-free drinks, and Tony was saying, you know, the killer is the kind of the sunshine, and you get out there and everyone is drinking, and that's when those associations come back, and the little voice says, oh, go on, you know, you can just have one, it's a sunny day, you deserve it. And yeah, well, that's where we need to remember why we're doing this, right? Remember our commitment, you know, catch sight of the better life without any, you know, that's the gig, isn't it? I must just also tell you, because I'm sure I won't be the only one who saw that absolutely bonkers article in the UK press in the week. This is the kind of study that kept me stuck for years and years. I was kept in the alcohol trap by these ridiculous articles that claim that alcohol is good for you. And this one, it was a corker. I mean, for a minute, I thought it must have been an April Fool's Day thing. But it actually says, I'll just quote from a bit of it. People who consume up to 14 units of alcohol a week have less chance of developing cataracts, especially if they drink red wine, a new study's found. Antioxidants found in wine could help explain why moderate drinkers are up to 23% less risk of having to have cataract surgery than people who shun alcohol. And then they go on to talk about what cataracts are and about various academics. And anyways, they say they found that people who drank within the 14 units a week maximum recommended by the government, equating to around 6.5 glasses, were less likely to have cataract surgery. Risk was lower amongst wine drinkers than those who consume beer or spirits. And then they go on to say the findings were evident in wine drinkers, so that may suggest a protective role of polyphenol antioxidants, which are especially abundant in red wine. I mean, honestly, I just shout BS so loudly on this. I cannot begin to tell you. You know, they do put a little disclaimer in. They say the authors of the study stressed that while there appeared to be a close association between moderate drinking and cataracts, they'd not found a definite causal link. No, I'm sure they hadn't. The NHS has identified drinking as one of the risk factors for cataracts. Did you hear that? I'll say that again. It's one of the risk factors alongside smoking, diabetes and family history. And thankfully, someone who's got some sense, Dr. Sadie Boniface, head of research at the Institute of Alcohol Studies, cast doubt on the findings. I bet she did, saying longitudinal studies could show a skewed picture of the nation's health because many volunteers were often in good health. She said, comparing the health of moderate drinkers with that of non-drinkers carries problems. Non-drinkers are a diverse group, including people who stop drinking because of health problems. This means moderate drinking can artificially look like it carries health benefits because the moderate drinkers are compared to people on average in poor health. The bigger effect seen among wine drinkers may be because of other characteristics of this group to do with their cataract risk, which weren't accounted for. If the amount of alcohol or the number of units someone drinks was having a direct effect, you would expect this to be similar regardless of drink type. Exactly. It's got nothing to do. It's so ridiculous. Honestly, this study, it made me so cross. It really made me cross. I mean, let me make this super, super clear. Do not drink red wine because you want to avoid having cataract surgery. I never heard anything so bonkers. You know, if you want the antioxidants and the polyphenols in red wine, have a grape. Have lots of grapes. Have resveratrol. Have lots of antioxidant-rich food and foods that are rich in polyphenols. But, you know, having a glass of red wine for the resveratrol and for the polyphenols is, as Catherine Gray says so beautifully in The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, like eating burgers for the gherkin, right? It's utterly ridiculous. It's like a study saying those who regularly eat, you know, McDonald's are going to be in better heart health. They're getting an increased amount of green vegetables because they get the odd gherkin. It's nonsense. Anyways, got that off my chest. It's incredible, isn't it? I just know that I would have looked at that study before, you know, before I saw Sense. And that would have given me all the license I needed to carry on drinking. And of course, I wouldn't have noticed the bit about under 14 units. Because once you start, if you don't have an off switch, it's exactly that. You don't have an off switch. So of course, you don't only have 14 units. And of course, you don't only have a couple of glasses of red wine. And if you do, if you are genuinely a moderate drinker, then yeah, hopefully your health is going to be good. You probably won't be listening to a podcast like this. And you probably won't be interested in that study. Let me just remind you one more time. There are zero benefits to drinking alcohol. Ever. Zero benefits. And when you stop drinking, pretty much everything improves, if it's improvable, right? Including eyesight. There's a definite difference in eyesight and certainly the health of your eyes. Because as somebody in the Sober Club said when they read that article, maybe it's just the people they studied were so completely glazed over because of the booze. Anyways, there you go. Let me tell you about this great brand because, as I was saying, I did that interview with the Shelf Help Club and I've done a few interviews about my book. And I always share my little mantra, keep the ritual, change the ingredients. I do think this is key. We're getting into the nicer weather and there is this thing, isn't there, about the sunshine. We do associate it with, you know, having a nice drink, having a grown-up drink and being social. And if we, you know, ever do get to be properly social again, then alcohol is going to be around. There's no doubt about it. So we don't want to be the ones just having a cup of tea or an orange juice on account of we're not 12. So, you know, alcohol-free drinks really, really do rock. And as I've said so many times, the choice is endless. And I came across this brand the Sir James 101 drinks. And these are just great alcohol-free substitutes. And their kind of vision is no compromise on taste. So they carefully create these recipes using great ingredients. And they say they really want to match the expectations of, you know, of a great drink. So they're pre-mixed. So the deal here is that you've got your, you know, these drinks pre-mixed. So if you want to go off and you want to go off to a picnic or whatever, you haven't got to take a bottle of this and an extra tonic and something else. It's all just done for you. So the flagship of the Sir James 101 range is the gin tonic. It's got some great reviews. It's a really great drink. Natural flavours, extracts like juniper and lime. So you've got this lovely aroma of fresh citrus fruit. And it has botanical herbs like juniper and rosemary. And they say, this is marketing speak here, but I like it, a fresh and soft bitter taste with hints of gin flavours. A pleasant sparkling taste provides a good harmony and balanced aftertaste. It's a really great drink. And also in the range is the bitter aperitif, which I really like, the bitter aperitif alcohol-free fresh. It's got a bitter orange flavour and herbs. And again, that is a really lovely drink. So again, all those herbs in there and the extracts of orange and rosemary and sage and clove, nutmeg. So I don't know, it feels quite luxurious, a little bit decadent, that one. And then, of course, as I've, you know, just been saying, we're coming to spring, it's all getting a bit more summery. So, you know, we want a mojito, an alcohol-free mojito, right? What's not to like? And this one's got natural flavours and extracts of spearmint and lime for this one. And they've got flavours of brown sugar, which make it taste a little bit like that kind of rum flavour that you'd get with a regular mojito. But I love this one because the mint flavour is really, really noticeable in this, and it actually smells a little bit of mint as well. So they're great drinks. So James101drinks.com is the website, and we've got a competition to give some away. So make sure you enter that, the Sir James 101 gift box set. It has 6 bottles of gin tonic alcohol free and 6 bottles of mojito alcohol free. And they've got little 101, Sir James 101 cups as well. So you get an easy serving. So make sure you check them out. That's our competition. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, you'll see that. Check out SirJames101drinks.com, or you can find them on Instagram, SirJames101drinks as well. I promised you this interview with the lovely Lotta Dan. We made it work with the time zones. Enjoy. I'm so delighted to be speaking to Lotta. Mrs. D, how lovely to see you again after so long. How are you?
Hi, good evening from New Zealand.
Yeah, it's morning here when I record this. So, just for anyone who hasn't come across you, your work, Lotta, I interviewed you, I think, a couple of times, didn't I, for Mrs. Deer's Going Without, of course, which was one of my absolute favourite books when I was first ditching the booze. Oh, man, you know, it's like what it's like when you get a book and you just think, I just can't bear it when this ends. I can't bear it. So I remember eking it out over days. And then I also love Mrs. Deer's Going Within. And you have a fantastic new book, The Wine O'Clock Myth. But before we get into the books, just tell us a little bit about you for anyone who's not familiar with your story.
So I am, you know, I always say I'm a pretty ordinary housewife and mother living in New Zealand. I used to work in television as a journalist. I married a journalist. You know, I had a pretty good life, successful. I was doing studies and doing a bit of travel back in the days when we could travel, and holding down a really good life on the outside, but I was completely and utterly soaked in booze. I was drinking at least a bottle a night, easily more on the weekends. It's just what I did. You know, 5 o'clock was wine o'clock. And like often happens, it just started getting away on me. And I got to a really, really, really dark place where I was stuck and low and miserable. And I had to make the utterly terrifying decision to quit. And yeah, that's when my life changed in more ways than one.
I remember reading in Mrs. Deer's Going Without, in which I think was your first book, certainly on this topic. I seem to remember at one point you spoke about that feeling of wanting to keep it secret. And when that happens, that feels like a change.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much shame and stigma around about alcohol addiction that you do want to keep your problem a secret. And when I got sober and I started writing to myself in a blog, I wanted to keep that secret too. It was just my own little private journey, and it was foolish, I now know, because we need other people to support us, especially people who understand what it's like to not be able to moderate. And so, yeah, I sort of kept things secret. I kept things tightly held. I sort of tried to just do it all my own way. And luckily, slowly things started opening up for me as I discovered a community online, and people who I were just so kind started talking to me, and I started talking to them, and we just lifted each other up. And that, to this day, that's what keeps me sober, is the connections I have with other people who are just like me.
Yeah. And I know you've spoken a lot, and I know we've chatted before about the whole parenting thing, you know, and the mummy wine culture and all of that. Is it still as rife, do you think, you know, as it was? So tell us a bit about the what it's like in New Zealand in terms of the drinking. I mean, we tend to think of Aussies and Kiwis as big old drinkers. Not that we aren't in the UK either, but we do tend to think of you guys as downing the booze. Is it still very much that mummy drinking thing too?
Yeah, I mean, it's rife and it's rampant and it's completely embedded in our culture. Mm. I was brought up, and it's still this way everywhere, to believe, you know, alcohol is the best way, if not the only way, to have fun, party, relax, show that you're a good hostess, you know, everything. Yeah. I mean, it was just wedded into life. And it's so prevalent here. In New Zealand, you can buy alcohol in the supermarket. It literally sits next to the bread and milk, well, the hummus and pesto in my supermarket. Mm. I live in a suburb. You know, I'm in suburbia, and it's quite a big suburb, but let's just say it's a suburb, not in the center of town. And there are 9 places in my suburb where you can buy alcohol. You get it everywhere. You go to the hairdressers. You buy a house, you get given a bottle of wine. You coach your kids' sports team as a thank you at the end, you get a bottle of whiskey. Like, it is literally everywhere. And so, yeah, to put your hand up and say, I'm not going to do that anymore, it's still a big deal. Mm. I mean, I think it is growing slowly, this whole sober curious, and more people are starting to speak out, but we're still way in the minority. And for my newest book, which I know we're going to get to, but I did interview a whole lot of women about their stories about alcohol. Mm. And a lot of them said, the biggest barrier to me stopping is that I'm worried that I'm going to lose my girlfriends, because that's what we do together. We drink, you know, that's our bonding thing.
So true, isn't it? It is so true. And at the beginning, you know, when you're at the beginning of this journey, it does feel terrifying how you'll ever fit in. And I've been having this conversation with a few clients that I've worked with recently, and it's not only the fear of what other people will say and how they'll kind of get on at social events. It's also the fact that they don't quite know who they are anymore. Tell me a bit about that experience for you, because, you know, for all of us, there is a sort of soul searching goes on, isn't there, where we've got to recalibrate into who am I actually? If you've been drinking for 30 years or whatever, like, what the hell? Who is this person? I mean, the good news I can tell anyone listening is that actually, when you come through this, you do actually start to like the person in most cases. That's where the beginning, the end of self-loathing can begin, as it were. But how was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was fun drinking Lotta. That was what I wanted to be. That's what I was my whole life. I mean, I started drinking at 15. I think I was a daily drinker by, let's say, 17, 18, certainly. And I'd spent 20 plus years, and that was my thing. I was fun Lotta, and I used the alcohol to allow me to be that. And it was what I identified with. So, yeah, taking it away was utterly terrifying. My biggest fear was that I was going to be boring, this boring sober loser who had nothing to say, who wasn't fun anymore, that everyone would judge me. Plus, who am I without it? I mean, it is utterly terrifying. This is why anyone who quits is a legend, because it really is scary. And now you and I and all the many other people who get sober, we can look back and go, you know, that's, you know, we go, oh gosh, that was so foolish, because I now know. But at the time, it is really terrifying. It's like, I often say, it's like standing on the edge of a cliff, looking into a black abyss of nothingness, of no fun, of who am I, and then taking a leap. And it's, you know, it's terrifying. But all I can say, and I know you back me up with this, Janie, is just take the frickin' leap, because what you're going to discover is, you know, the real you. So for me, yes, I'm still fun Lotta. If the party's right, if my mood's right, if my outfit's right, if, you know, if everything comes together, I can have the best time. But I'm also okay with the fact that sometimes I just want to do a jigsaw puzzle and listen to a podcast. Sometimes, like what I've just been doing before I came on here with you, I just want to lie on the sofa and watch Below Deck on Bravo and drink chamomile tea. Yeah. And that's okay.
It really is. It really is a case of that. So many people find that once they ditch the booze, they find they're quite introverted and sometimes quite sensitive. And they can actually enjoy their own company. And I think that is one of the really beautiful things about ditching the booze, about once you've properly stepped into that new identity, you can allow yourself to enjoy regular things, ordinary things. You know, I remember I was always chasing something. Nothing was ever enough. It was never enough to, I used to really envy people who used to say, oh, I'm going to go and have a picnic, you know, or I'm going to, and it's all, you know, like small things. I'm going to have a picnic, or I'm just going to watch something, and I'm going to have a cup of tea. And I used to think, well, wow, how can you get pleasure from that? Is that pleasurable? That doesn't sound very rock and roll. And actually, it was me that was the one not having any fun, actually.
Yeah, and I can vividly remember, and it sounds so cliched, but I'll say it anyway. I can vividly remember one of the first moments I had, and I was on a water slide at a swimming pool with my son going down, and I felt pure joy. And it was, again, I can use these words and say it to you, and the people listening can hear it. But in that moment, feeling that feeling of that pure joy was really intense.
Yeah.
And I had this realization, like, wow, this is so cool. I'm really happy. And that's the thing. And Brené Brown will tell you this. You can't selectively numb.
Exactly.
You know, I spent my life trying to numb, particularly sadness. I now know I'm actually naturally a very watery person. I spent my life trying to avoid feeling sad, frustrated, angry, whatever. Alcohol helped me do that. But in the process, I numbed everything else. And so when I took it away, yes, I got full on emotional, you know, like a roller coaster. But that joyous feeling and that contented feeling in its pure form, like not from a bottle or whatever, it really is magical. And so it's worth holding on to those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us all about this new book then. What was what did you want to get across with the new one?
Well, first of all, I said after the second one, that's it, no more books.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I don't know about you, Janie, but I find the whole, I love writing books, but I find putting them out quite, it's quite an intense process.
It is. It's like having a baby, I always think. It's definitely as much energy as having a baby.
Yeah, and it's a bit noisy for a while and you get some attention and then it goes very quiet.
Well, it's very difficult in the UK, let me tell you. I'm finding it really hard in a pandemic because normally I would be out and about doing a lot of events, so
so you just sort of wait. So anyway, I was like, I'm done with books, no more. But I had this niggling sense that I hadn't quite finished. And so basically the first two books were memoirs. It was all about me, and I just wanted to write this final book, which was actually about the bigger picture, the environment we're in. Yes, it's a personal journey. We need to jump into the black abyss and make that decision for ourselves, but we're doing so in an environment that is so stacked against us. It makes us feel isolated. It makes us feel like we're the ones that have a problem, that are broken and weak, because everyone else, you know, is happily drinking. So you would think, with all the marketing and messages that go on. So I thought, right, I'm going to write this book, which is really journalistic, really, and just unpicks this situation we're in, unpicks all the marketing and social media culture messages that come at us, women especially, unpick what it's actually doing to us physically, emotionally, and all the rest of it. And tell other women's stories, because all have fascinating stories. So I've got these 20 stories contained within my chapters, which are told in the first person from women, some still drinking, some not, and just their truthful, honest stories. And they're all, gosh, I mean, some of them, they're incredible.
Yeah. Right. Do you think that it's, you know, you say the marketing is often aimed more at women. And do you think that there has been a rise in women drinking in your experience?
Yeah. And the stats will show you that as well. I mean, we're drinking a whole lot more. And we're spending a whole lot more on it. And we're a huge market for the liquor industry. And that they're an industry. They want to make money, hire people, do their business well, increase their bottom lines, you know, just all those natural things businesses do. Unfortunately, their product is one that is not fun and great and happy and light all the time. It's actually addictive. It actually causes cancer. Like, it is a grade one carcinogen, up there with arsenic and tobacco. Not many people know that, but it is. So they just push it on us and they target us really well. Really well. And so we believe their messages. We like their pink drinks. This newest craze of these bloody, have you got these in the UK? They're like alcoholic seltzers. So they're like boozy water.
Yes.
And they've got organic and, you know, light. And it's just another ploy to hook
us in.
Dressing
it up, yeah.
To drink this product. So, yeah, I just, look, I keep saying this. Not everyone needs to get sober, right? Not everyone gets to a place where I certainly was, where you're in a dark place and you need to stop. But I at least want even the moderate drinkers to have their eyes opened and understand you are being targeted. This product is inherently dangerous. Be careful with it. And I just wish we lived in an environment where it was treated with a bit more caution.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, one of the things that I find myself talking about kind of all the time recently is the link between anxiety and alcohol. And it's something that's never just, they don't seem to make any connection within the kind of medical profession, or almost none. And yet women, especially, you know, certainly as they get older and they're having perimenopausal or menopausal symptoms, are rocking up to doctors with anxiety, never asked about their drinking.
No. And, you know, you've heard this term hangxiety that's getting passed around now. So it's that hangover anxiety. You think the alcohol is relieving your anxiety because when you take that first sip, it releases dopamine. And it makes you feel good. Like, there's a reason we drink, right? It works. In that first moment, you get that dopamine hit. Who wouldn't want that? Instant relief. My anxiety's gone. You know, it's like clicking your fingers. Everything's gone. I feel good, right? The chemical in my brain is working. But, yeah, you're right. Taken beyond that first sip or that first drink to the second, third, or if you're like me, eighth, ninth, you're messing with your brain chemistry so much. And then as it leaves your body, any kind of underlying anxiety that you might have or other emotions, feelings, you know, big things, little things, they're still there. And now they've been made worse because you've been messing. Like, how can you actually know what's going on if you're pouring booze in your body the whole time? Same with, I mean, I'm heading into menopause now. Golly, that's a whole nother podcast. And I just think, how could I really know what was happening with that if I was still drinking a bottle of wine a night? I don't know how I could unpick what was going on.
No, it's so true. I mean, I remember that I used to always be really super hot, like super hot. And I used to kind of joke about it and go, oh, come and huddle near to me for warmth, you know? I'm just, when I say hot, I don't mean, oh God, you probably thought I meant I was attractive. No, I meant actually hot. I meant like heat emanating from my body, right? And so I was really concerned. I thought, oh my God, the menopause is going to be, I'm going to be like hot flushing, like you can't believe. But I was really conscious of this hotness, this kind of heat. And I thought, you know, this is just who I am. I've always been like that, right? Or for a long, long time. Of course, I now realize it's just because I was at a raised temperature because I was drinking.
Is that right? So did that go away when you quit?
Yes. I mean, I'm still not a freezing kind of person, but now I can wear a cardigan like a regular gal. I mean, it makes me just laugh out loud. Well, actually, it doesn't. You know, it's the whole thing is goddamn ironic. And I'm so glad you've done this book. You know, and you have looked at this journalistically, because the reality is, bright as we are, many of us haven't really quite got that alcohol is addictive and just how bad it is. For my book, I asked William Porter to actually write a piece for me because I thought, I don't think I know enough about it even now. So I got him to write a piece about exactly what alcohol does to the body. And it's one hell of a shock, isn't it? So I'm really glad you've done this, because I'm guessing that there were plenty of women that you spoke to who didn't really know. They genuinely didn't know.
No, Oh, no. And even friends of mine, I've got this wonderful friend down the road who isn't much of a drinker at all, and she read my book when it was still in draft form, and she literally rang me up and said, Lotta, I had no idea it caused cancer. And she was horrified. She just didn't know. But the thing is, that knowledge that it's dangerous, addictive, cancer-causing, it sits at such stark odds with the way that it's presented in our society.
Exactly. You think,
can it be that bad if it's available in 9 outlets in my suburb? Like, it doesn't marry up. So, yes, we're smart, intelligent people, but we're presented with these facts that are kind of contradictory. And then it's just easier to go, well, it can't be that bad, and just keep on our merry way. And for some people, that's fine. But for a bunch of people, it's not, because we get addicted, we get broken, it brings us down, and it just stifles our inner, you know, spark.
Yeah.
And those are the people I really, I mean, I do want to reach the moderate drinkers as well, because I think if they've got their eyes open, that they'll also be calling for change. But I really want to reach the people who are struggling and just say to them, take the leap. It is, I promise you, that fear, I get it. But you are going to get to a point where you and I both are, Janie, where it's like, do you miss that stuff at all?
Oh, my God, no, not at all. And it's funny because I remember thinking years and years ago, you know, I used to think to myself, I just want to be a normal drinker. I just want to be able to have one or two. I want to desire one or two. My thinking was never that I wanted to stop. That felt ridiculous. I wanted to be able to drink but not want too much. And I think that's the case for a lot of people, actually. They haven't caught sight of that better life without any. Well, not yet, maybe. But I do think what you're saying is so interesting, because one thing I talk about a lot is this need for both sides of the equation, if you like. So we really need to be clear on exactly how awful alcohol is and what it does to us, and so that we've really got that pain point, that need to get away from. That's so important that we get that, and most of us don't for ages. You know, we certainly aren't taught that in school, let's put it that way, all throughout our life. And as you say, everything's working against us in terms of the marketing. But then even when we've got that, an even more, perhaps even bigger part of the component is that we, as you say, catch sight of that, what's there when we take the leap. You know, how you said, you know, just take the freaking leap, because I can promise you, right, that there's joy on the other side. So we've got to have that thing to look to, haven't we? It can't just be a case of, oh, I must not drink, or it will make me ill. I must not drink. I must not drink. It's got to be a case of, wow, I wonder what could be there for me if I'm brave enough to do this.
Yeah. And for that, we need people to speak up. That's where we just need people to be visibly in recovery, sober, not drinking, whatever you want to call it, who are standing up proudly and saying, look, I don't touch alcohol ever, and it's totally fine. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I quit, and this is nearly 10 years ago now, believe it or not.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
I'm coming up my 10-year soberversary. Oh. I didn't have that many role models that I looked to, and the only kind of ones, and I always say this, it's a bit embarrassing, but I knew, and I'd seen them on the red carpet on Channel E, was Rob Lowe and Keith Urban, right?
Yeah.
Far off celebrities who've got no relation to me, lumpy, bumpy housewife from New Zealand. But I knew that they didn't drink. I'd seen them on the red carpet and they didn't look miserable.
Yeah.
They weren't even talking about alcohol, but they looked okay. And so I had this vague idea that it was possible to get to a place where you were a happy non-drinker. And I remember on that morning where I made that decision to quit, that I was determined that what I was going to do was to learn how to be a happy non-drinker, that was possible, and that I was going to get there. And boy, it was hard, but guess what? That's where I am. I'm a happy non-drinker.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I love talking to people like you who've got that many years under your belt, because, you know, again, many people I work with will say, well, you know, once I get to a year, I mean, it'll all just be flat then, or I've done my 6 months. Well, now what? So people worry that as time goes on, it won't be a thing anymore. But for me, as time goes, I mean, I know I'm kind of working in this field as well, but I genuinely believe even if I wasn't, I would still, you know, celebrate my soberversary. It's still the biggest thing I've ever, ever done. And I love the fact that, you know, you're 10 years and you're this passionate. Marion Keyes, the author, has just been talking about how she's 28 years sober, and Jamie Lee Curtis, 22 years in the press. So we hear more and more now about however many years you are, it's still goddamn cool.
Yeah, that's right. It's like this little, I think of it like a little kernel of pride that I have tucked down deep inside me because I know where I was and I know what it took for me to get out of it. And even though it seems easy now, and most days it is, well, all days it is, I never hanker for alcohol, but I have to have a constant eye on how I'm looking after myself and keeping myself well. But I have, underlying everything, I have this immense sense of pride and satisfaction of what I've done, and I will never forget that. And I will keep, you know, celebrating the soberversaries. If it's not out in public, it'll be with my family and friends because, yeah, I mean, yay me. And a lot of people in recovery feel this way, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And for the women that you've spoken to, has it been the case that for most of them they've found, you know, that renewed sense of self-love, if you like, or at least to be able to start to look at that? I call it being self-love curious, because that's often the next thing. You know, are most of them now becoming aware that they really do need to take care of themselves rather than just boozing the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the ones in my book that had quit, like I said, half of them were actually still drinking and were wrestling with it and kind of knew they needed to stop but didn't want to. So that those are really interesting as well. But yeah, the ones that have quit and have moved on from it, yeah, they, I mean, you know what, you have no choice but to get to know yourself really well because you are sitting with a wide open brain all of the time.
Yeah.
And it's not just on an ordinary Tuesday. It's like through the death of someone you love or through a really stressful time at work when you're getting emails that are really problematic or through whatever. And every time you go through each of those instances and you don't numb or avoid and you just deal with it and it's uncomfortable and you process this and you get through, you can't help but kind of get to know yourself more and you just sort of settle down into that. And it's just the best thing, honestly. I shudder to think that the lotter 10 years ago was someone who wanted to be fun, was an emotion avoider that used to pour scorn on any kind of navel gazing, is what I called it. Oh, you don't want to be a navel gazer, who was very uncomfortable when other people talked about their true feelings. I just had this kind of shield up about humans, right? Yeah. Me and other humans. And now I'm the opposite. I'm not, it's not that I want to just talk about all your deep, dark fears, but I'm here for all of it.
Yeah.
No matter what.
And that really massively changes your parenting as well, doesn't it? For anyone listening who's a parent, it makes the most incredible difference to the parent that you become.
Yeah. I mean, apart from the fact that I'm modeling being a non-drinker to my sons and they know that mum doesn't drink because she can't control it. I mean, I just think that alone is great because that's kind of a knowledge about booze that I didn't have growing up. But yeah, they also get a mum who sometimes cries, sometimes angry, talks about stuff openly, is there every night to, especially now my eldest is 16, he doesn't go to bloody bed until 10:30, 11, and we have our best chats at that time of night. I'm not full of Merlot. I'm like totally, you know, here to talk to him. Not that he's a huge talker, but yeah, it's changed everything. I mean, I'm just a much better version of myself.
Brilliant. What else is going on for you then, Lotta? What else are you doing?
Well, after I put out this newest book last year, which was in our lockdown, it actually came out, I just sort of thought, right, now it's time for me to move on and get a job. So I've got 3 part-time jobs now. I run this online community for people who are trying to quit drinking. That's free and funded by the New Zealand government. I do workshops on addiction around the country for groups. That's all funded by our Ministry of Health as well. So we do day-long workshops.
Wow, amazing.
Amazing. And I've now got my 3rd job where I work part-time for an organisation called Victim Support, which helps people who are dealing with crime and trauma. So I do some writing and communications for them. So I'm pretty busy, but I mean, goodness knows how I would be doing all of this if I was still boozing. And running the house and trying to do jigsaw puzzles and trying to teach myself how to knit. But I think, to be honest, I've been trying to knit. I knitted one shawl. It took me about 6 months. I'm on to the second one and I'm thinking, I think, Lottie, you're just going to have to admit that knitting actually isn't your thing.
It's meant to be super good for you, isn't it? Because you lose track of time. You're really focused on what you're doing. But I've never been able to do anything like that.
I sit there quite tightly and I can't take my eyes off and wear it and drop a stitch. It's not relaxing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think there's a kind of fine line between, you know, the things you enjoy. And I remember having this conversation with a bunch of Sober Club members who were talking about sewing. And one of my Sober Club members is making her own incredible underwear, like amazing lingerie, lacy lingerie. What the hell? I know, it's really impressive. And we were having a whole conversation about it. And I was sort of saying, I just can't sew, right? But then in the same breath, I was remembering, well, you know, I'm trained in NLP and that's actually a limiting belief. It's not a fact, it's a limiting belief, right?
Yeah.
So I had to kind of challenge myself and say, well, it's a limiting belief that I can't sew. I could sew, but you know what? Here's the thing. I don't bloody want to. I'm not interested. But that's okay too.
Yeah. Well, there's your self-love. It's okay.
Exactly. Whereas you see, when my kids were young and the school would give us like little bags of felt stuff to sew. Oh my God, the trauma of I didn't feel old enough. I didn't feel, no, certainly not old enough. I didn't feel comfortable enough in my own skin to say that kind of thing. So I'd just be kind of trying to pay someone else to do it for me.
That's quite a lot that they're asking you to sew.
Oh well, yeah, there you go. Anyways, I don't know what that was all about, but it's interesting, isn't it? We do get to know ourselves a little bit better and we do get to take care of ourselves. What would you like people to get from this book, Lotta?
Just really open eyes about the reality of alcohol, what it is as a product, what it does to us, especially women. Just realise you're being targeted. Just realise there's no accident about the ads that are showing up on your Instagram or your Facebook feed. Just know that they want your dollar. They don't actually want to make your life better. And as always, just know if you are a person that's struggling, again, not everyone has to quit, but if you are a person that's struggling, you wake up at 3 a.m., feeling miserable, beating yourself up, there is a much, much, you know, better life ahead, and just ditch the booze.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Lotta. I really appreciate it. Lotta Dan is the author of The Wine O'Clock Myth. Really appreciate it, Lotta.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Lotta. And it's so lovely to chat to you again and to a fellow author, because, you know, it's a bit tough trying to get a book promoted in lockdown. So, you know, I love chatting to other authors and she's going to do a little thing for me with her group as well. And as I say, if you have been on a desert island and you haven't heard me talk about it yet, my book is Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. And you can get it in all the usual places, your Amazons and etc. And do please leave me a review. I'd so appreciate that. And if you want a signed copy, if you go to thesoberclub.com and click on shop, then very happy to do that for you. Just give me a few days to actually physically get to the post office. Don't forget that our Champneys retreats are lined up for end of May. I think we have one in June, and I think there's one in July and possibly one in September. So we'll see how we get on with the booking of them, and let's hope, you know, roadmaps work and all of that. It'll be amazing to be able to host a retreat again and meet up with people. I'm so looking forward to it. So do check that out. Again, just go to thesoberclub.com, click on events if that's something you're interested in. Champneys is at Tring in Hertfordshire, and it's a very small number of people, and it doesn't matter whether you're sober curious or day one or you've been sober for absolutely years. The stuff that we cover is appropriate for everyone. It's around self-care and sobriety and just scaling up, upscaling everything to do with your optimum health and well-being. And that's the mantra for the Sober Club as well too, by the way. So again, if you're day one or if you're year six, whatever it might be, then check us out, because there's so much amazing stuff going on in there. I've got, you know, it's really rocking at the moment. We've got some fantastic experts lined up doing stuff for us. And it's very dip in and dip outable. So you can, you know, do the bits you want to do. We're going to do something on organic skincare. We've got an organic hairdresser chatting to us. And then completely different, we're doing a kombucha making workshop. And then we're having a decluttering expert. I mean, just a whole range of stuff that some of it you'll be interested in and some you won't. But all of life is there. And of course, we've got an amazing community and the course Get the Buzz Without the Booze. So just check it out, soberclub.com. I really hope you have a great Easter, whatever you're doing. I hope you get some time to chill out, take care of yourself. I will be doing more around the whole thing of anxiety around coming out of lockdown. It's a thing I know for some people. If you have got sober during lockdown, then you may well be feeling a little bit anxious about everything opening up, and it's going to be different for you, and you're going to have to do your prep. So I'll definitely do more about that. Love getting your feedback for the podcast, so please follow me on Instagram, drop me a message, or Facebook, wherever you wherever you are on social media. And if you are struggling, by the way, always reach out. There is so much help available. So always reach out for help. Don't be on your own, because, people who've been there, done it, got the T-shirt, are now really willing to give back. And it's a very much part of it that when you've got this happiness, this excitement, I don't use happiness in the glib sense of the word, when you've sort of found out who you are again, most people are really keen to, if they can, try and help others, find that path too. So always reach out for help. There's no weakness in asking for help, by the way. It's absolutely a sign of strength. Happy Easter. See you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.